Text PCE, first historic printing, is what we're going to be looking at. If you're following with us online live or watching this after the fact, if you go to graceflockbiblechurch.com, scroll down under recent sermons, click the link for February 1st for lesson 276, and you can load the notes and follow along with us as we go through the information. So let's get right into it. Lesson 276, Assessing the Printed History of the King James Text PCE First Historic Printing. Introduction, point number one. In lesson 275, we examined the pure Cambridge edition position's reliance on Psalm 12, 6, and 7 as the so-called double purified seven times argument, We found that this claim rests on selective historical categorization and arbitrary numerology rather than objective evidence. So remember, he's got to count so that things equal seven, and so then he arbitrarily leaves certain things out and says these don't count, these are demi-standards, because he needs everything to work out to being seven in the end. We talked about that last time. By omitting significant additions such as Scattergood's 1683 Cambridge Quarto and Paris's 1743 and 1762 revisions, the argument focuses on a neat sevenfold pattern that does not reflect the complex reality of the King James Bible's printed history. Point two. Additionally, we note that the PCE framework introduces internal contradictions. On one hand, it asserts that purity exists timelessly at multiple levels. On the other, it claims that, quote, total perfection was historically unavailable until the PCE. These conflicting premises create logical tension and undermine the cohesion of the coherence of the position. The theological implications are equally concerning, as elevating one edition as the bearer of, quote, remember we saw this, full light, risks diminishing the sufficiency of earlier Bibles and challenges the historic doctrine of God's providential preservation. So remember we saw, I quoted specifically from the guide where he says that full light was not arrived at until the PCE. All right? So again, those are his words, not mine. Next point. Having surveyed the key pillars of the PCE position, we are now prepared to examine Verschuer's claims regarding when the PCE was first published in history. So this is something that we've built towards, and we're going to start talking about it now. Unless otherwise noted, all the citations in this lesson are taken from the guide to the PCE and follow the pagination in the PDF document. And let me again just say, despite some of the things that have happened even this week in social media, I respect Verschuer as a defender of the King James Bible. Alright? He does not need to be doing that. He could be taking a much easier road by promoting the critical text in modern versions, which he does not do. So in that respect, I appreciate what he's doing. I just think he's going too far. Okay? So as always, the disclaimer, if the PCE position was just a personal preference slash belief that the circa 1900 Cambridge text was slash is the most accurately printed text of the King James Bible, I would not have a problem with it. Unfortunately, however, the PCE position as nuanced or enunciated by Matthew Verschuer is much more than mere editorial preference. It is an exclusive King James Bible edition advocacy position that is built upon layers of doctrinal, philosophical, theological, and historical strata that need to be unpacked and understood. This is borne out by his written works, YouTube videos, and comments on the Textus Receptus Facebook page. My decision to include extended coverage of the PCE position in this class is consistent with the overall theme of the class to enunciate a position on the King James Bible that begins with faith-based presuppositions and does not deny the facts of history or break the laws of logic. Our summary of the printed history of the text has been a prolonged case study in why verbatim identicality of wording is not a tenable position. So that's the introduction. Anybody got any questions or comments before we move on? Okay, so bottom of page one, our main topic today is going to be looking at what he says about the first historic printing of the PCE. So bottom of page one. Matthew Verschuer identifies the first historic printing of the PCE as being produced... Now, let me stop here before I go any further, before I forget. Everything I'm going to say in this lesson is based on the guide. Okay? Next week and the week after, we're going to look at two more recent things that have been said. One from a publication in 2024, and then another one from a publication in 2025. So everything that I'm going to say right here is taken from the guide to the PCE. Remember what I said when we started this, that I take the guide to be the flagship enunciation of the position, 570-page guidebook to the PCE position, and then more recently, more things have been written. So what we're going to investigate right now is what the guide has to say, okay? So, first historic printing of the PCE. Matthew Vischer identifies the first historic printing of the PCE as being produced by Cambridge University Press under printer Charles F. Clay around 1900. Clay served as printer from 1886 to 1916, and the PCE standard, quote, first came about during his tenure. After Clay, J.B. Peace, 1916 through 1923, continued printing PCE Bibles, followed by Walter Lewis, 1923 to 1945, and Brooke, tell me on the pronunciation here. Huh? Crutchley, 1945 to 1974, during what Brochure calls, quote, the golden age of the PCE King James Bibles. Okay? So he's identifying here four different printers who guided Cambridge University Press from 1886 through to 1974. And he's calling this the golden age of the pure Cambridge edition, or the PCE. Okay, so we'll get the points on page 2. Quote, the pure Cambridge edition appeared circa 1900. That's from page 172. Next quote, the Cambridge printers who produced correct Cambridge Bibles listed in the front or back pages begin with Charles F. Clay, who was printer to Cambridge University from 1886 to 1916, in whose days the first standard came about. After him was J.B. Peace, printer from 1916 to 1923, after which came Walter Lewis, 1923 to 1945, whose name appears in the golden era of pure Cambridge edition King James Bibles, and Brooke Crutchley, 1945 to 1974. Those who were printers of Cambridge University Press afterward may have for a time retained the pure Cambridge edition, but the text was changed beyond this time, so that by the turn of the millennium, this would be 1999 into the year 2000, Cambridge no longer stocked nor distributed the pure Cambridge edition. So he's saying that from the primacy and printing of Charles F. Clay through to Crutchley in 1974, Cambridge University Press is publishing what he is calling the PCE. From 1974 through to the end of the 20th century, he's saying that they abandoned the PCE standard for something else instead. Okay, that's what he's saying. Look at the next paragraph, also from page 183, continuing the quote. However, God in his divine providence brought things about so that the pure Cambridge edition would be identified and that it be restored and placed as the central standard and ultimately the common form or edition of the King James Bible text. Okay, now, who's the one that's bringing that about, by the way? He is, all right? And then finally, in this section, from page 570, pure Cambridge edition, circa 1900, C.F. Clay, or J.B. Peace, etc., Cambridge edition, Redpath, blah, 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 that's from page 570, okay? So, circa 1900 is the alleged date of the first printing, and then there's this time period that he identifies as the golden age of the PCE.
So the golden age is from 1916 to 1974, or is it the 1945 to 1874?
I would take it to be from somewhere around circa 1900 through to 1974, according to what he said here.
Okay.
Okay. Good question. Next point. So according to the guide, Brochure does not name a single dated Cambridge edition. Example, 1900 standard text or 1904 edition as a definitive first printing of the PCE. Okay? So he does not name a single published edition as the first known edition of the PCE text. He never does that in the guide. Okay? Look at the next point. The pure Cambridge edition appeared circa 1900 during the tenure of Cambridge University Press printers such as Charles F. Clay, 1886 to 1916, and J.B. Peace, and that's from pages 183 and 550, 570. Next point. He strongly associates the emergence with peace with the Cambridge edition. I'm reading too fast. Let me start over. He strongly associates its emergence with Cambridge adoption of Redpath's pronunciation scheme and editorial refinements, suggesting Redpath may have influenced the PCE's formation. Now what he's saying there is there are some Bibles that were published that had, like, you know how in the dictionary they have like symbols to show you how you pronounce a word? There were some King James editions that were published that had that type of thing in them to help people pronounce long or hard to pronounce words. And Redpath is a publisher or an editor that introduced some of that type of pronunciation type thing. So they'd have the word and then some symbols to help you try to figure out how to pronounce the word, is what I'm saying. Okay. Next point. Brochure emphasizes that the PCE was an independent editorial work, not merely a continuation of Victorian Cambridge editions. So if you read this, he makes a big distinction between the Cambridge editions that were published during the reign of Queen Victoria, what he calls the Victorian editions, and then what he's calling these PCE editions sometime after the turn of the 19th century. So, Brochure emphasizes that the PCE was an independent editorial work, not merely a continuation of Victorian Cambridge editions, and that it corrected readings like Geba at Ezra 2:26 for the first time in King James Bible history. He talks about that on page 523 and 551. Lastly, in this section, he treats the PCE as a distinct authoritative edition, comparable in significance to the major purifications of 1629, 1638, and 1769. So, while Brochure clearly ties the PCE to Cambridge University Press around 1900 and its internal editorial process as distinct from Victorian-era Cambridge Bibles, which were purer, so the Victorian Cambridge Bibles are purer or better than Bibles printed at Oxford or London. He does not identify a specific cataloged edition by name or year beyond the generic circa 1900 in his guide to the PCE. So he is not pointing to a specific edition and saying this is the first one. He's leaving it circa 1900 during the printing overseen by the first guy, Charles F. Clay. So stop there. Any clarifications? Yeah.
So, like in this class, you've always reverted to like that catalog, that, you know, each
Herbert's catalog.
Yeah. So are all the Bibles that have been printed, what was that, up until what, 1961? 61. So it should be in there.
Well, so, and this admitted, and I talk about this further down the notes in this lesson, but admittedly, the Herbert's catalog is not exhaustive. Okay? It's an excellent guide, it's a excellent starting place, but it is not exhaustive to all of the, everyone that's ever been done, is my point. Okay? So, I have more to say about that as we go through here. Okay? Any other comments? So, next point. What page are we on?
Three.
Brochure does not provide documentary or textual evidence such as a collation date, title page facsimiles, or catalog references proving that Charles F. Clay was the first printer of the PCE. Instead, he asserts this claim based on historical association and providential reasoning. So there's nothing, he does not give a title page, an ISBN number, a catalog listing, nothing to prove that Clay is the first printer of the PCE. Instead, he argues, as I say here, from historical association and his providential reasoning. Look at the quote from page 183. Quote, "The Cambridge printers who produced correct Cambridge Bibles listed in the front or back pages," okay, we already kind of quoted some of this, "begin with Charles F. Clay, who was printer to Cambridge University Press from 1886 to 1916, in whose days the standard first came about." So he's asserting that. He hasn't proved that assertion yet. "After him was J.B. Pease, printer from 1916 to 1923, after which was Walter Lewis, 1923 to 1945, whose name appears in the golden era of Cambridge, Pierre Cambridge edition King James Bibles, and Brooke Crutchley 1945 to 1974. Those who printed, those who were printers of Cambridge University Press afterward may have for a time retained the Pierre Cambridge edition, but the text was changed beyond this time so that by the turn of the millennium, Cambridge no longer stocked or distributed the Pierre Cambridge edition. Look at the next part of this that I have bolded. However, God, in his divine providence, brought things about so that the Pierre Cambridge edition would be identified, and then I have a bracket that I added here, over a century later when Verschoor himself did so, and that it would be restored and replaced as central, standard, and ultimately the common form or edition of the King James Bible text. So he's making a claim that this dates from circa 1900 during the printing of Clay, but he has provided no objective historical evidence that such an edition was actually published by Cambridge University Press at that time. You guys following this so far? Yes? The claim is assertive, not evidential. Next point. In the guide, Verschoor does not cite archival records, ISBN numbers, or specific Cambridge catalog entries. His justification is historical and providential, linking Clay's tenure, 1886 to 1916, to the emergence of the PCE. Verschoor does not reference Herbert's historical catalog of printed editions of the English Bible to identify any specific Cambridge edition as the first PCE printing. In the guide, he only asserts that the PCE appeared circa 1900 under Cambridge printers like Charles F. Clay. He does not cite catalog numbers, title page descriptions, or catalog other entries to substantiate this claim. The argument is based on internal textual features. Example, his list of 12 distinctive PCE readings from page 18 of the guide. And providential reasoning, not on historical evidence from specific printed editions. The claim that Charles F. Clay printed the first PCE is asserted without documentary or textual proof. You with me there? Any questions?
So he doesn't have a Bible.
In the guide, he does not have a concrete, historically printed, historic edition that he points to say, this is the first one. He is surmising this based upon a lot of different factors.
So you can't grab a Bible and point to the any dates or anything written. There's nothing.
You cannot grab a specific Bible, look at the title page, the copyright date. He offers nothing for substantiating the circa 1900 printing. He's asserting it. Okay? Now, he wrote some stuff more recent, which we'll get to, which is why I said, remember that what I'm saying here is only what is in the guide. Okay?
Let's say this is a PCE, but then somebody put one of those enunciating, so then that would make it impure?
I think he's okay with that.
Oh, that's okay?
Apparently that's okay. So based on the guide, Verschoor does not give a precise bibliographic list of historic Cambridge printings by year, such as 1900 standard text or Herbert's catalog number that cohere with the PCE. Instead, he provides, number one, a general time frame, circa 1900. He names printers. I'm not going to read all the names again. A claim in whose days the standard first came about. A timeline entry, Pierre Cambridge edition, circa 1900, Charles F. Clay. He provides internal markers, his 12 readings, okay, that we've looked at a lot in the past, and he provides providential reasoning tied to Psalm 12, 6, and 7, and the seven purifications concept. Circa 1900 is chosen because it fits the prophetic schema of seven purifications and the timing of the Pentecostal revival of the early 20th century, not because Verschoor provides bibliographic evidence from Herbert or archived Cambridge editions. The claim rests on interpretive theology, not historical proof. Look at the next quote. The seventh thunder was to provide the answer to the questions, What Bible does God use? And what is the pure language in the time of church restoration and in the millennium? Is God's word, is God's pure word available now in one volume, in diverse communication forms, accessible anywhere on earth? Consistent with the entire weight and direction of God's providence in history, consistent with the dethroning of Roman Catholicism and its words, to be in the heart of true believer, to be in the heart of true believers, and the fulfillment of its own prophecies, there was a question to scientific credibility of the Bible, its truth, and its transcendence. These questions, especially raised because of the introduction of the false Bible into the church, so he's talking there about the Revised Version, you know, Bibles, non-King James Bibles, the revelation of the true Bible would therefore be a fulfillment of the purification of God's word in English, so he's referring here to the PCE, and would be the thing by which Romanist doctrine should be consumed. This was answered by the Pure Cambridge Edition circa 1900, which was done in a manner consistent with honest scientific inquiry, and here it is, and contemporary with Pentecostal what? So why does it have to be circa 1900? It has to be circa 1900 because historicist interpretation of prophecy is mingled with Pentecostal revival, and this has to be the timing then of when this purified, pure word of God would appear in coherence of all of these other streams of church history and theological thinking. Okay, let me finish the quote. This would also solidify the end. This would also solidify an end, the purification of the English Bible, showing that the version or underlying text were never to be altered, and the translation was never to be changed, that the English Bible was not lost, nor irrevocable, that the English was accurate and infallible, and that it was the model standard, that it was for universal use, and that it was essentially blessed as the very thing which was carried down from God to earth and purified in the earth. Thus the truth itself was self-fulfilled. So, is he basing any of that on an objective historical analysis of printed editions? No. Bottom of page 4. Right? Any questions? No? Bottom of page 4. A comparison between A.S. Herbert's Catalog of Printed Editions of the English Bible, 1525 to 1961, and Verschoor's list of Cambridge publishers is extremely instructive. While the catalog is admittedly not exhaustive, so there's my admission, okay, it's not exhaustive, one is struck by how few editions are listed as having been printed by Cambridge University Press during the period in question. Most importantly, there are no entries for Cambridge University Press in the catalog during the year 1900. So they're in the catalog, there's no entry for the year 1900 of anything Cambridge University Press produced as far as an edition of the King James Bible. Okay. The following is a breakdown by CPU, Cambridge University Press printer, as laid out by Verschoor above. Okay, so we start then with the work of Charles F. Clay, 1886 to 1916. Herbert's catalog lists 5 editions. Okay, there's an 1887 New Testament, and then this, it says here, was printed for the BFBS. This is the British Foreign Bible Society. Okay. That's what BFBS stands for, British Foreign Bible Society. Printed for the Society at University Press, Cambridge, Herbert, page 434. There's a whole Bible from 1901, again printed for the BFBS at Cambridge University Press. Okay. Then notice this, 1904, New Testament, notice no Herbert number. Okay. So, Alex Boyko, who's assisting me, has added this edition. He found this edition that's not in Herbert's catalog from 1904. So, we are in essence here trying to steel man what we are responding to with what Verschoor is saying. So, with Alex Boyko's help, he found a New Testament, okay, printed for the British Foreign Bible Society at University Press, Cambridge. Now, look. It includes 5 out of the 6 New Testament markers of the PCE, excluding Matthew 26:39, and which reads farther instead of what? So this is, first of all, this is only for the New Testament, okay? And second of all, does it match all of the New Testament readings that Verschoor says you need to have in order to have a pure Cambridge? No. And so we can date that now, and we're adding this. This is not listed in the catalog. Alex found this, and we're including this here, okay? So the earliest one that is found that we know of at this point is a 1904 New Testament, and even it does not match his listing of all what all the New Testament readings should be, okay? Then we have a 1909 Whole Bible, H2156. This is also printed by Cambridge. And then we have a 1911 Whole Bible printed by James Pott in New York, the American branch of the University of Cambridge Press. Okay, but none of those are an identical match to what he says the pure Cambridge edition is. Even the one that is the closest from 1904 only includes the New Testament, and even in the New Testament it is still lacking at least one of the hallmark readings that he says you need to have in order to have a pure Cambridge edition. In J.B. Peace, 1916 to 1923, there are no additions. Walter Lewis, 1923 to 1945, there's a 1931 Whole Bible, again, which is published for the British Foreign Bible Society, printed at Cambridge. This is a ruby. It does have paragraph markings following what's in the revised version as far as possible, and they've been inserted after Acts 20:36. And then there is 1936, a Whole Bible, H2255, from University Press. Now, notice what this says. It says, quote, in Herbert's catalog, "This new edition is the outcome of a desire to produce a medium-sized Bible which would not have only typographical merit, but also be designed with the general reader in mind. It has accordingly been following outstanding points. Number one, the type has been specially designed. Number two, the use of italics has been discontinued." So there's no italics in this particular Bible. "Small but important typographical improvements have been made. Number four, the text of the preface, the translators to the reader, has been restored to its proper place. There are two maps." That's what Herbert says on page 475 of the catalog. And then look what we say underneath. This is the first locatable edition via Herbert's catalog that coheres with Verschoor's PCE standards. Okay, it's the first one that you can find using the catalog and normal dating methods that that most people would look to that coheres with this using Herbert's catalog. And notice the publication date on this is 1936. Does that qualify as circa 1900?
Not really.
Okay. Brooke Crutchley, 1945 to 1974, there are zero editions, and then the listing ends in 1961. Okay, so does everybody understand what I'm saying there? So can you use the catalog to locate the first printing of the pure Cambridge edition? Not circa 1900, you can't. Okay. So I'm going to move quickly through pages 6 and 7. In addition to Cambridge University Press, that's CUP. Verschoor identifies the following additional printers who published the PCE. So, I'm not going to read all these quotes. I have them here for documenting purposes, but for the sake of this lesson, I'm not going to read all that material. The other printer that publishes what he would call a PCE or coherent with the PCE standard was William Collins, who was publishing in Scotland. So all those quotes there are about William Collins. Then he talks about also at the bottom of the page, American World Publishers and Riverside Company. There were some people in America who were publishing an edition that was close to what the PCE was. And then a third one on page 7 is the Pitt Press in London is also publishing something similar to what he would identify as a PCE. Okay, so Cambridge University Press is the main printer of it, along with these other subsequent or secondary printers that he identifies. All right. So again, that stuff's in the notes. You can read the quotes for yourself. I'm going to skip that for the sake of the lesson because I want to make tracks to the end. Okay. So Verschoor's framework strongly benefits from placing the PCEs around circa 1900, and here's why. Number one, Historic prophetic alignment. His interpretation of Revelation 10 and Psalm 12:6 hinges on the idea of seven purifications culminating in the last days. By situating the PCE near 1900, he can align it with, number one, the Pentecostal revival, Azusa Street, 1906, and then other ones in Scotland, etc., which he views as prophetically significant. And number two, the rise of global missions and English as a dominant language, fitting his claim that the purified word was ready for worldwide proclamation. So it's convenient to put it circa 1900 because it fits with all these other streams of argumentation that we've seen being made. Second, end of purification timeline. If the PCE appeared much earlier, example 1769, it would weaken his argument that the final purification coincided with the modern era of spirit outpouring and global evangelism. Circa 1900 allows him to frame the PCE as the last day's Bible, perfectly timed for the prophetic fulfillment of Revelation 10's little book, which we saw a few lessons back. Next is providential narrative. His theological narrative emphasizes that God preserved his word through history and finalized it just before the 20th century, a period he associates with the restoration of the apostolic gifts and preparation for Christ's return. This timing reinforces the sense of divine orchestration. And then last, why not earlier? You could also say why not later, okay, but why not earlier? If Assure admitted the PCE existed in the 1800s or earlier, it would undermine the symbolic connection to the seven thunders and the idea that the purified Bible was completed at the dawn of the modern Pentecostal age. Circa 1900 is not just a historical guess, it's a prophetic anchor. So in other words, does the system need it to originate from that time period because everything's based on these things converging, okay? So the bottom line is that circa 1900 date is essential for his historicist interpretive framework because it ties the PCE to eschatological themes, the Pentecostal revival, and the global spread of Christianity. Without that timing, the prophetic narrative loses much of its force. So in other words, do those factors need to combine like that for the overall argument to work? Okay, I'll stop there quick. Any questions?
Think about it as dominoes. One of them doesn't, one falls, it all falls.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why in the guide, he's not identifying a specific one.
Correct.
Now, we'll see later on that what was originally circa 1900 in 2024 became the 1920s. And then in the most recent, now he's saying that he's found the first catalog, the first identifiable one in 2025. He wrote a book called Vintage Bibles, and he says that now he can show a first Cambridge coming from 1911. Okay, but 1911 is still not circa 1900. That's a decade later. Circa means around or about, right? So anyway, let's continue. Page 8. On page 452 of the guide, Brochure quotes correspondence from Cambridge University Press, Press's managing editor, that he dates around the year 2010. Quote, "I am always amazed," so this is the editor of Cambridge University Press, "I am always amazed when I see occasional references made to the pure Cambridge edition." So stop there. Is the editor of Cambridge University Press aware of the existence of anything called the pure Cambridge edition? No. Next paragraph. "I have seen no real evidence to suggest that there was any distinct revision process undertaken by or on behalf of Cambridge at the end of the 19th century, i.e. after Scribner and after the process of revision led to the publication of the revised version, which justifies the claim that, quote, an edition was consciously developed at that time." So does the editor of Cambridge University Press have any institutional knowledge of them doing an intentional edit of the text around circa 1900? The answer is what?
No.
He does not. "I would suggest then, as before and after, each time a new setting of the Bible was undertaken, the editorial and production teams responsible, whether at Cambridge, Collins, Oxford, or elsewhere, took as their pattern copied text for typesetting what they regarded as the best, most accurate version of the text available and rekeyed it as accurately as they could. Quote, for a brief period of time, it was possible that most Cambridge Bibles did conform to the version of the text that adherents of the pure Cambridge edition regard as perfection, but we have no means to identify with which, if any, Cambridge editions or typesettings of the early 20th century might have been the one that prompts the pure Cambridge edition notion. So do they have any institutional knowledge of this ever occurring?
Nope.
No. On the Bible Protector website, the main proponent of the PCE concept, there is a brief list of key passages, passages/spelling, for identification, and a much longer list of over 500 textual elements. It should be noted here, in the context of someone suggesting a definitive piece of research, these two lists do not agree. Not all the items listed in the key identifiers appears in the supposedly definitive list. So he's saying that the editor of Cambridge University Press is saying, are there inconsistencies within Verschuer's own identification of these things? And then he goes on to say, insofar as I have made available to, as I have been available to evaluate these, it appears that there are three current or recent Cambridge editions which come close to the PCE. Some new Cambridge editions were originating during the 1920s and 30s, apparently using as their pattern copy a version that nearly accords with your expectations. Our cameo and turquoise, now called presentation reference, and Pitt Minion editions fall into this category. So notice, he's saying that they don't have anything that matches exactly with what he's saying needs to be, with the standards that he's saying equal a pure Cambridge. Is everybody following that?
Wow, they shoot the hole in it.
Yeah. So, researchers at Cambridge University Press were not able to identify a specific Cambridge printing that would qualify as the fountainhead of the pure Cambridge edition. Moreover, they found no evidence of any edition being called the pure Cambridge edition during the 20th century. So there's no evidence of anybody calling a specific Cambridge printing a pure Cambridge edition during the 20th century. The response from Cambridge University Press regarding the PCE position essentially expresses skepticism and caution about the claims made by proponents of the PCE. Page 9. First, no evidence of a direct revision process. Cambridge University Press states that they have not seen any real evidence that a conscious, distinct revision process was undertaken by or on behalf of Cambridge University Press at the end of the 19th century, after Scrivener and the revisions leading to the revised version that would justify calling the PCE a formally developed edition. So do the printers of the text that he's saying is the pure one, do they not acknowledge what he's saying is true? Okay. This challenges the PCE claim that it is a uniquely purified and finalized edition produced at that time. Cambridge University Press has no record of it happening. Number two, pattern copy text usage. See, Cambridge University Press suggests that historically, whenever Cambridge or other publishers set a new edition, they simply use what they regarded as the best and most accurate version available as their pattern copy text and rekeyed it as accurately as possible. This implies that the PCE may not be a uniquely created or finalized edition, but rather a product of normal printing practices using the best available text at the time. So in other words, it happened by what?
Editorial discretion.
It happened by accident, right? These printers are just looking at it and they're just making editorial changes, okay? Let's see. Which one are we on?
Pattern
copy text usage. Cambridge University Press suggests that historically, whenever Cambridge or other... We already read that one, didn't we? Yeah, we did that. Possible conformity, but not definitive identification. Cambridge University Press acknowledges that for a brief period in the early 20th century, many Cambridge Bibles may have conformed closely to the text that PCE proponents regard as perfect. However, Cambridge University Press admits that they have no means to identify which specific Cambridge edition or typesettings correspond exactly to the PCE or prompted the PCE notion. This suggests that the PCE is not clearly documented as a distinct edition in Cambridge's historical records. Next, multiple Cambridge editions close to the PCE. Cambridge University Press notes that there are several Cambridge editions from the 1920s and 30s, such as the Cameo, Turquoise, Presentation Reference, and Pitt Minion editions that come close to the PCE text. This indicates that the PCE text is not unique to one edition, but may be reflected over multiple editions over time. Now we're going to see that's essentially what he's going to start to argue in a later work. Okay, but remember, we're confining our observations now just to what he says in the guide. Okay, inconsistency in PCE identification lists. Cambridge University Press points out that even on the Bible Protector website, a main proponent of the PCE, the lists of key passages and textual elements for identifying the PCE do not fully agree. This inconsistency undermines the claim of a definitive, well-established PCE text. That's what Cambridge University Press said, what we just quoted. Okay? Implications for the PCE position. The Cambridge University Press response does not deny the existence of a text similar to the PCE, but questions the claim that it was consciously developed distinct edition with a formal revision process. It suggests that the PCE may be more of a retrospective identification of a type text found in several Cambridge printings rather than a uniquely produced edition. The lack of clear archival or production records supporting a formal PCE edition means the PCE position relies heavily on textual comparison and doctrinal interpretation rather than on historical publishing evidence. Cambridge University Press's mention of multiple editions close to the PCE text implies that the PCE is not a single exclusive edition, but part of a continuum of Cambridge textual tradition. The inconsistency in PCE identification criteria weakens the argument for a definitive authoritative PCE text. Everybody understand what we're saying there? Yeah, page 10. Oh, bottom of 9, page 10. The Cambridge University Press response especially challenges the PCE position's claim of a distinct, consciously produced, and formally recognized edition at the end of the 19th century. It frames the PCE as more of a textual tradition or ideal reflected in several Cambridge editions rather than a single documented edition. This means that while the PCE text may represent a purified form of the King James Bible, the Cambridge University Press does not officially endorse it as a unique or formally established edition. So, is that a problem?
Cambridge University doesn't have a problem with Pentecostal theology.
Cambridge University Press is disagreeing with his interpretation. Okay? Page 10. According to the guide, there is no evidence that... Now, this is important. According to the guide, there is no evidence that anyone before Matthew Vashore ever identified, named, or promoted a specific Cambridge text as the pure Cambridge edition. So who's the first one in history to do this? He is. When did he do it? Early 2000s. Okay? The guide repeatedly implies and in places directly states that this designation and the precise identification of the PCE as a distinct final purified Cambridge text originated with Matthew Vashore and his circle, Victory Faith Center. The guide emphasizes that even within the King James Bible only movement, no scholars, editors, or defenders had ever pinned down which Cambridge edition was the correct one. That's from page 6. Vashore notes that even respected King James Bible experts did not know of a single correct Cambridge text. When he sought answers from prominent King James Bible defenders, he says, quote, "Not even the greatest experts seem to know anything about it," unquote, page 10. The guide marks the identification of the PCE as Vashore's own discovery on April 4, 2001, thereby marking the moment when he personally concluded which Cambridge text was the correct one. The guide claims a, quote, "proper purification occurred around 1900 in Cambridge printing tradition," but adds, "it was not documented, not recognized, and generally unknown before his investigation." Okay? So no one knew about this, or much less called it the pure Cambridge edition, until he did, on April 4, 2001. Okay? Moreover, the guide never claims the term existed prior to Brochure's work. Instead, it consistently treats the Pure Cambridge Edition as a label he and Victory Faith Center applied after recognizing the correct Cambridge form. So, no one throughout the 20th century ever called what he's calling the Pure Cambridge Edition. These guys are identifying it in the early 2000s and naming it. Okay?
It's
their creation. The guide provides no evidence whatsoever that anyone before Matthew Brochure used the term Pure Cambridge Edition, identified one specific Cambridge text as the uniquely correct standard, or articulated the 12 defining readings that later became PCE markers. Look at the quotes. Here's from page 6. There has been a great ignorance of the fact that a final purification took place in the history of the King James Bible. So nobody knew about it. People are ignorant about it. Those who have studied the history of the King James Bible in depth would have been aware of the major purifications that took place, such as the editions of 1629, 1638, and 1769. But there was also a proper purification that took place circa when? 1900, which resulted in the final text of the King James Bible, which is in all ways the definitive presentation of the King James Bible and should not be altered. Then from page 11, it was God who by his divine providence led me to believe and now promote the exact right text of the King James Bible, which we came to call the Pure Cambridge Edition. So where did this idea come from?
Brochure.
It came from Brochure and Victory Faith Center, as they are claiming divine providential leading into this realization. Cambridge never said this. They can't identify when any of this stuff happened. And it's concocted as a result of him. No one knew. So look at the next point. So no one knew about this for over 100 years before Bible Protector revealed it to the world in the early 2000s. So for 100 years, there was a perfect King James edition out there, and all the King James only advocates, the King James defenders, they never knew it. Cambridge knew nothing about it until he understands it, reveals it, and makes it known in the early 2000s. Okay? So no one knew about this for over 100 years before Bible Protector revealed it to the world in the early 2000s. The guide does not identify any specific historical edition by year, publisher, printer, or edition code as the first published PCE. It never provides a first print date, a specific Cambridge edition name, a catalog number, a Bible Society printing date, or a bibliographic reference for the earliest PCE. According to the PCE doctrine outlined in the guide, the PCE existed for over a century before anyone, including Cambridge, knew it or recognized it as a distinct edition until Brochure identified it in 2001. You following that?
Mm-hmm.
Any questions or comments before we make a run at the end of this? We were talking about that before class started a little bit, and let me just be honest to you about it. I do not know, and I'm going to say at this point, I think that he's not in this for money. I would not ascribe to him the motive of. I think he sincerely believes this. I think through his theological framework and lens, he believes these things to be the case. I just happen to think that I can't go here.
Was it to elevate his authority?
Well, they've made themselves the guardians of the PCE. They've declared that and said that God has made us, essentially, we have the authority to be the guardians of the PCE, a text that no one knew existed until they identified it,
yeah,
and called it and named it, etc. Okay? Yeah.
Through the course of this class, you've often used like that David Norton and other
yeah, Campbell.
Do they have anything to say?
Norton acknowledges that there are some editions that have some of these characteristics, but he doesn't recognize them as a pure Cambridge edition. You know, you can look at history and you can see editions that have some, like that 1904 one I just mentioned to you a minute ago. like there's some that are out there, but the idea that this is the pure one, et cetera, is he's identifying that in 2001 and then making a text available to the world in 2006, 2007. So let's keep going, or we're going to run out of time. So, therefore, the PC position of is guilty of the error of presentism. We talked about this before. Historians use the word presentism to describe a methodological error where a modern idea, category, or interpretation is projected backward on the past, even though people at the time did not use that concept, recognize it, or operate according to it. Presentism creates a false impression that the past was consciously participating in a framework invented later. Okay? The PC position is guilty of presentism for the following reasons. Number one, the PCE supposedly existed in print from around 1900. Number two, nobody at the time recognized it, named it, or documented it. Number three, the term Pure Cambridge Edition was created by Brochure in the early 2000s. Number four, the specific 12 reading definition of the PCE did not exist historically. And number five, the first definitive PCE was actually the 2006 electronic edition, which we'll get to in a minute. So the guide teaches the following timeline. 1900, supposed first pure, circa 1900, supposed first pure Cambridge text printed. From 1900 to 2001, nobody recognizes it or names it. 2001, Brochure identifies it. In 2006, the first definitive edition was created electronically. Okay? Thus, the narrative requires a modern category, PCE, modern definition, the 12 readings, a modern doctrinal interpretation, final purification, to be retroactively applied to historical printings that never claimed or represented those things. This is actually the historical fallacy of presentism according to standard historical methodologies. Put another way, the PCE is guilty of presentism because, number one, it retroactively labels old Cambridge printings with a 21st century category. Number two, claims they represented a concept nobody held at the time. And three, interprets the past through a framework invented long after the fact. Okay? Any questions?
So there are no physical Bibles out there from 1900 era that match his 2006.
No, and you'll see that right here in the conclusion.
There are 2006 of these out there?
There is a 2006 copy on his website that matches all of his.
Have a question.
Yeah.
How are these people getting these things that are not electronically? They can't get things electronically, so all these people are going to hell because they don't have his Bible.
Well, that would be an exaggeration. He wouldn't say that. But what he would say is you need to find a printer who's printing the PCE. And there are some, particularly church publishers and local church Bible publishers might, I'm not sure, be printing editions that are PCE approved, for lack of a better way of saying it. So now today, you could go to certain printers and buy one of these if you wanted to, because they are printing a text that is compatible with what he says, with his electronic PCE.
But he has no missionaries.
I don't know anything about that. I'm not going to speculate. All I'm saying is, to answer your question, there are some places that would be publishing what he would call a PCE text today. Let's look at the conclusion. Run out of time. So, according to the guide to the Pure Cambridge Edition, historical Cambridge and Collins printings contain many of the readings later associated with what Matthew Brochure and Victory Faith Center would call the Pure Cambridge Edition. However, the guide explicitly acknowledges, now watch this, that no single historical printing could be considered perfect, authoritative, or completely accurate. Okay? Brochure states that when he examined surviving Cambridge and Collins Bibles, quote, none was necessarily definitive, neither was there one that I could be sure was free from typographical errors. You hear what he just said? Okay? This admission forms the foundation of the guide's argument. Although a tradition of Cambridge-type printings existed, No single printed Bible represented a fully pure and final form of the text. But it's supposed to have come into existence circa 1900. Next point. Because of this, the guide teaches that a decisive step was required to produce what it calls the definitive PCE. Vishore explains that Scripture itself convinced him that such a definitive form must exist, but did not yet exist in any printed Bible.
Sounds like he just undermined his own argument.
Mm-hmm. He wrote, yes. I'll get that in a second, Eli. He writes, quote, that there should be a definitive and scrupulously correct representation created, in an electronic text which would be able to be disseminated abroad and become a universal standard. In other words, the guide claims that earlier printed editions, though often close, were incomplete or flawed, and therefore the real PCE had to be produced through human reconstruction, not simply recovered from an existing printed form. I'm telling you guys, I've been studying this for 6 months, and the whole time I'm like, there's something off. I'm missing something. Something doesn't make sense. And then there it was the whole time. Okay? He has created a text that did not exist in the identical form that he created it.
There are
nothing out there that matches his electronic copy. There is no historical printing that is an identical match in every detail to what he has created himself. Look at the next point. As the guide describes the process, Vershore and his associates spent several years comparing historical Cambridge/Collins printings, reconciling the differences, and correcting perceived errors. So they're doing this. This project culminated in 2006 when Vershore completed what he calls the first truly authoritative PCE text. The guide states plainly, quote, the electronic file was finalized July 2006. This finalized electronic edition is the first version that the guide presents as complete, perfect, and definitive. In effect, the PCE, understood as a premise, unified, authoritative text, came into existence not in the early 1900s, but in 2006, through the deliberate editorial reconstruction. Guys? I'm sorry, but this frustrates me. Okay? From this, next point, how much time do I got? Okay. From this, the internal logic of the guide becomes clear. While the PCE is claimed to have historical roots around 1900, the guide also asserts that no historical printing actually embodied the PCE in its final authoritative form. Instead, Vershore argues that only the reconstructed 2006 electronic edition can rightly be called the definitive PCE, because earlier printings each contained minor variations or potential errors. None of them constituted the exact PCE recognized today, meaning the definitive PCE did not exist in print before Vershore created it. Okay? Thus, the guide's own narrative requires the conclusion that no historical printing exactly matches the 2006 electronic PCE, and that the PCE is a fixed standard, is a modern reconstruction rather than a historically attested edition. The guide's position is not that the PCE was preserved and recognized in history, but rather that it had to be identified, reconstructed, and completed in the 21st century because the historical record lacked a single perfect exemplar. So he picks through all of the historic representations that he would call PCE, which, by the way, he gives a pass on. They're PCE, even though they're not identical, but he gives it a pass. Okay, which we'll talk about in a later lesson. He gives them all a pass until he creates what is now the perfect text in the 21st century. I'm sorry, guys, but I cannot buy any of this. This is way too much to swallow. I don't care the level of sophisticated argumentation that is going on here. There's no record in Cambridge University Press or anyone else that anyone from 1900 to the year 2000 identified a Cambridge edition as the pure Cambridge edition, that they pointed to a specific edition. There's not even one by his own argument that exists during that whole time period that is exactly accurate, not identical to the one that he created electronically in the early 2000s. So, if you're going to buy the PCE position, you have to buy that Matthew Verschoor somehow providentially made all the correct edits, and that was... I don't see how you come to that conclusion outside of some sort of extra biblical guidance. Okay? And then on page 14, we don't have time to cover it, and I didn't intend to cover it. There is an update. He made a response on the Facebook Texas Receptus Academy page on January 26 about my lesson from last week, and I've included in Appendix A, starting on page 14, a bit of a response to what he said there. I'm not going to go over that here in class, largely because we are out of time. So, any comments or questions?
Is there any, as far as italicization requirements in his PCE?
Oh, there's italics.
But everything has to be specifically italicized according to him?
I would say yes. That's what he would, if he's going to be consistent, he would have to say that. And it's interesting that he would call that one from 1936? It was in the list. What page was that on? In 1936, H2255 was published by Cambridge University Press. It had all of the correct readings on his 12. I looked at this myself. This one does cohere with all the 12 that he says it needs to have, but this one says right in the description that they didn't have any italics in it. So how does that fly then? Okay. So why is that okay? Why is it okay for that PCE to not have italics? It just becomes frustrating and difficult to deal with. I'll just say it that way. Okay. Now, again, I could appreciate that he's trying to defend the King James Bible. I just cannot support this defense. We're out of time. I'm going to have to close the equipment down here. If you guys have any other questions, we can take them as we pack up and leave. So, next, I didn't read the last point. Next week, we will, the last point there on page 12, in the next lesson, we will begin looking at some of Verschoor's more recent claims from some of his